Da-na-da-na-da-na. This is where the intro music goes. Da-na-da-na.
But, and this butt is a big butt.
Ooh, I cannot lie.
Yeah, I like big butts. Yeah. That is a hot take, my friend. hot take. Num, 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 num. I'll eat that crow. Man, Cincy Stephen's going to get that.
What's up, everybody? You know what time it is. It is time for Grade A. I am Adam Wygan, and I am joined by my partner in crime, Adam Kuhn, and we are about to break down a 1-0 FCC victory at TQL, our first sha-la-la of the MLS season. We finally scored a goal at home, and we grab all 3 points, and we now sit atop not only the Eastern Conference, but the Supporter Shield standings as well. But before we get into how we are dominating the league once again, let me bring in my co-host, Mr. Adam Kuhn. Adam, how the hell you been?
I've been good. Just got back from Buffalo, New York, and Niagara Falls. Took a little extended weekend vacation on the kids' spring break, and
Did you do the barrel over the falls? Did you get in the barrel? Go over the falls?
You know, it's out of season. They wouldn't let me do it.
Did you do the Maid of the Mist?
Yeah, that actually was out of season. It doesn't start up till like April 2nd. So
because it's cold, cold, right? And you would freeze to death.
As we were driving up there, it was like 11 o'clock at night, and it was snowing about as hard as I've ever seen snow. So,
Jesus.
It was covering the road so fast. Literally the last hour of the drive, it snowed 3 inches. So
white knuckle driving, right?
It was really white knuckle driving. My wife was like, "Well, I'm glad you're driving and not me."
Should we turn around and go home? No, honey, we've come far enough.
Well, it was kind of like, should we just try to get a hotel here? And it's like, we're literally 20 minutes from the house, which was like an hour from the Airbnb, but should have been 20 minutes.
Turned out to be more.
Yeah, it was just a really slow slog for the last little bit, and made it, and kids had fun, went bowling,
good,
went to the aquarium, tried all the foods. It was pretty good.
Yeah, have some WEC. Did you have some beef on WEC?
Had some beef on WEC. Went to a place called Duff's, which is kind of famous for their WEC, also famous for their chicken wings. So, got a little bit of both. And
there you go. Amazing. Best of both worlds.
Went to a great pizza place. I mean, it was food was solid.
Good. Good. Well, you know, one thing that wasn't a slow slog, maybe about a minute when we scored, was this game against NYCFC. So, FCC has not scored a home goal in an MLS match yet this season, with scoreless draws against Toronto and DC. So you have a wounded and down 9-man NYCFC coming to town, and you kind of thought that it was going to be another one of those San Jose games. Shout out to those that remember. But it wasn't. It did not play out that way, although FCC did have its chances. So let's jump into it. What do you say? Let's start in the back where we always start. Roman Celentano, he played pretty damn good. For as much as this should have been a lopsided FCC win, NYCFC had a couple of really decent, I won't even call them half chances, they were just chances. And I thought Roman stepped up. I think a lot of this Patrick Schulte talk, to Arsenal might have him, his ears perked up like, dude, I'm better than that guy. Come on. So, let's start with Roman.
Well, like I said, back on the Super Draft show, Schulte will always have like the height. He always looks more like a guy that should be playing in the Premier League. And Roman will always,
he's got that mustache.
He's got that mustache, though. So, who knows? But Roman played a great game. His first save was the save of the match. Came just a few minutes before the Lucho goal, right at the beginning of the half. Just a really great save on a close range diving header by Santi Rodriguez, and Roman had to make a diving save to get to that. I mean, just an absolute quick cat-like reflex save there. His second save was barely a save. I'm not even sure 100% it was a save, kind of a popped up ball between Aaron Bupenza and I forget even
what would have been Keller Miazga or Hagelin at the time.
Well, it was Bupenza went up with I believe it was Alonzo, and gotcha. You know, kind of popped it up into the air. Pretty easy catch for Roman. So that was the second save. Wasn't much of a save, but third save was also on Alonzo Martinez. A shot from distance. Was through a lot of traffic, and he was able to catch it. You know, could have easily taken a deflection. So he was you know, kind of, you know, waiting to see on the ball's path a little bit. Had to make a last second dive on that, and did well to catch that. And then his fourth shot was a low hard angle shot. It was, you know, really well handled. His distribution was still a little bit shaky, only 66% on his passes. He did have 10 recoveries, which, you know, he usually doesn't. I usually don't mention his recoveries because he usually doesn't clear a whole lot of like crosses and stuff. But he was a lot more aggressive in that regard.
Talking about Roman?
Yeah.
How does a keeper get a recovery?
Well, you know, basically catching a cross.
Well, I knew that, Adam. I was doing that for our listeners.
Oh, okay. Yeah, sorry.
I'm kidding. I had no clue.
Or, yeah, like a caught save is considered a recovery. Gotcha. Yeah, he did lead the team in progressive passing yards also with 418, which is something that a lot, you know, some goaltenders do that all the time, but Roman tends not to. So, like, you know, it was maybe a little better distribution out of the back than normal for him, but still not fantastic. But the saves, the first save and the third save, especially, I thought were easy to get wrong. Fourth save was no real slouch either. I gave Roman Celentano a 7.5.
His third shutout in five games, Adam. Like, that's and a lot of that is down to this back line that we're going to start talking about now. Now, it was a reshuffled back line as Miles Robinson was off on Gold Cup winning international duty. Or no, was it Nations League? I can't keep track.
Yeah.
Anyway, we beat Mexico again. Whatever.
Yeah. Dasa zero, like always.
Yes, exactly. So he was not in here, but the two of the three usual starters were, and we will start on the left with Ian Murphy. So give me the rundown on young Ian, who got a vote in the GM straw poll, or I guess the hey, you, we're not going to say who really said this, as one of the most underrated players in MLS, Ian Murphy.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of thought it was a shaky game for Ian Murphy. You know, a bit too much space wide on Fernandez's shot. He had a really bad back pass that led to a dangerous free kick, 25 yards out. Luca had to come back and make a foul because Murphy had kind of put us in such a tough
no man's
spot.
Land. Yep.
Yeah. So that was not the free kick itself went into the wall, but the rebound shot was pretty dangerous. Murphy was also only 2 of 7 on his duels, only 2 of 9 on his long passes, 78% overall on his passing. So I just didn't think he was doing that much defensively or that much successfully defensively. He also got dribbled around twice. And he had which led the team, and he also had 3 clearances, which did put him as a tie with Miazga for the team lead. But really not a lot of positive to say about Murphy, other than we did get a shutout, so it couldn't have been that bad. So I gave him a 5.5.
One guy that was doing the heavy lifting, I think, on this back line all night long was Matt Miazga. Probably one of his, I can't say his best game of the season because we've only played 5 of them. But this is why you have a guy like Matt Miazga. This is why he is so important to this team organization, just his ability to lead from the back. I thought he was stellar in this one. What'd you think?
Yeah, I agree. I thought this, you know, a lot of games, it never really gets to Miazga. Miazga really doesn't have to make that many plays in that many games. Same can be said for Roman. You know, it's hard to give these guys good scores some games because they just don't do that much. But I will say in this game, I think a lot of this shutout lays on his shoulders, just, you know, without Miles in the lineup, without Obi in the lineup.
Yep.
To get a shutout win is a big thing. He had a great step up, basically just tackled Santi Rodriguez in his tracks. And he had two interceptions. He had eight recoveries, which put him in second of the field players. Three clearances, which tied him for first. He won all five of his duels. You know, if I had one knock on him, you know, I thought he probably should have been a little more aware of Santi's presence behind him. But I kind of put that on Keller. I don't think Keller let him know that Santi Rodriguez had Keller beat to the front. So, you know, Miazga was a little out of position on that, but you know, I'm putting a little bit more of that on Keller on that. Matt Miazga also had 333 progressive passing yards, which was the best of the field players, 81% passing, which was the best of any of our defenders. You know, I just thought he was solid all game, and you know, really, you know, other than one play, didn't put a step wrong all night. I gave Matt Miazga an 8.0. He was my man of the match.
Ooh, all right. Low key, I thought you might go Lucho because of the goal, but I think that Matt Miazga is a deserving winner of the Adam Kuhn man of the match. A calmer, more controlled, more composed Matt Miazga.
Yeah, I wanted to bring that up too. I'm glad you brought that up because, yeah, I thought this was a game where tempers got up a little bit, and you know,
yeah, the officiating led to some of that.
Yeah, that, like, it was a rough game. A lot of no calls and stuff like that. And you know, Miazga didn't get involved. I thought, you know, no yellows for him is big, you know, because it seemed, how many games last year did he miss because of yellow card accumulation? So, you know,
have to see when the real refs come back, if they are, you know, officiating him differently.
That's true. But yeah, I just thought Miazga played a lot more under control and thoughtful in this game. And so I gave him man of the match.
Yeah, he's definitely been more composed. Speaking of guy that was composed in front of the net, I tweeted it out before the game, Adam. Kip Keller was going to get a goal. And then he got it. And then they, for some reason, called it back. And I still don't agree with it. I didn't watch any replays. I just disagree with it. Kip Keller should have had a fucking goal, man. Like, come on. So other than his stellar finishing, which he's not paid to do, although I guess he is kind of, let's talk about his defending. How was that?
I mean, I thought his defending was a little shaky at times. You know, I really wanted that goal for Kip Keller. I mean,
me both, man.
I mean, that was just a really sweet play. I don't think he was called for offside. I believe it was Lucho on the preceding pass. You know, I thought Kip did well. Like, he was in an offside position, did well to get back. I really don't think they called it on him. You know, had a few kind of bad mistakes. Like I said, I really thought that their best chance was that Santi header. Santi just flat out beat him to that. And, you know, he also pretty clearly doesn't call for help from Miazga, who would have been able to shore up the front of Santi there. So that was a misplay. He also had a really bad back pass that led directly to a deflected Perea shot. He did have four progressive passes, which was pretty good, but he was only one of three on his duels, and he had two recoveries. You know, just not super duper involved. I he did have a few like really nice little plays, but you know, I kind of thought that he was taking on a little more water, maybe not as much as Murphy. I gave Kip Keller a 6.0.
All right. Okay, that finishes the back line. Excuse me, let's move into the midfield. A very good midfield for this game. And we will start on the left-hand side with Luca Orellano, or as he would like to say, it's pronounced Orellano. We tried that, but we got yelled at and made fun of, but it turns out we were kind of right. Should have had an assist in this one. Probably would have been one of the assists of the season, just a disgusting ball into Bupenza.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, I thought he had a solid game all around, so sing his praises for me.
Yeah, I mean, I thought Luca was pretty good, especially offensively. I mean, he is clearly taking the mantle of Barrial on this team, because it's when it comes to offensive statistics, it's basically him and it's Lucho. And so, yeah, or Jano, like the 8th minute spin move and ball to Bupenza. I mean, like I said, you said it and I have it written down. That should have been an assist. I mean, just an absolute quality ball, and Bupenza needs to put that by Freeze. Right after that, had a really great 1-2 with Baird, gets a quality but hard angle shot on goal on that, but was really a testing shot from that, for being from such a hard angle. Had really nice free kick service to Kupo, that Kupo headed it back to Baird, and Baird's shot was blocked. The only real kind of smudge on Orellano is that he was only 5 of 12 on his duels. I just didn't think his defense was all that great. I thought he and Murphy kind of, they had a hard time in this one, especially when you consider, like, New York City's playing their third string guy at right back. I mean, they're, I've never heard of this guy. Like, they made bad players look decent, offensively, but Luca's offense was good. He had 5 shot creating actions, which tied him with Lucho. He and Lucho combined for 10 shot creating actions, which was more than the rest of the team combined. He had 4 progressive passes, which tied him for second, and he had 2 progressive carries, which was good for second. I gave Luca Orellano a 6.5.
Yeah, I think offensively he is showing what he's capable of as he gets more comfortable. Defensively, still some work to do, but not terrible, not like the abyss that maybe some people thought he was going to be. So I think all in all, you got to be pretty excited with where he is right now, especially when you start to consider him against a guy like, well, that he replaced in Alvaro Barrial, and what he was bringing game in and game out. And I kind of feel like, I mean, I'm not going to say they're on the same level yet, because I think Barrial's service just over time was more dangerous, but that's probably down to more minutes played. But you can see why the coaching staff is excited about this guy and why they are so, like, hyped on his upside, right?
Oh, definitely. Like, I do think that, say what you will about our attack, I'm not all that worried about our attack right now. This is a lot of guys without a lot of games together. So, on defense, we have a lot more like old hands especially in right up the middle. Like you got Roman, you got Matt Miazga, you got Obi, you got Kupo, you have a core of the defense. The offense is all changed around. It's just going to take time for these guys to kind of figure each other out.
Mm-hmm. Agree. All right. Well, let's move to the guy that plays next to him, Pavel Buka. I think he had a shot on goal. I couldn't remember if it was him or if it was the Baird that kind of had a shot at the top of the 18 that unfortunately they kind of placed right to the keeper. But I think, again, this is another player that's kind of growing into their position, kind of finding his feet amongst the other guys that he's around. And I thought that he was fairly decent in this one. What did you think?
Yeah, I thought generally he was pretty good. He had, his thing, I think, was like mostly positive. He did have a couple of, like, I thought, kind of rough mistakes. Like his passing, it was 91% passing, which is very good, but he had a couple of missed passes that were led directly into New York City chances. He did have four progressive passes, which tied him for second on the team. He was also kind of caught out defensively a couple of times, but you know, in general, like I said, like I think he was pretty good in general. He did have seven recoveries and four interceptions, which the four interceptions tied him for first on the team. He was only 2 of 5 on his duels, but yeah, I thought in general Pavel Buka had a fairly good game. I gave him a 6.5.
All right, 6.5, short and sweet and to the point. Obi, still out on this one. Still dealing with an injury. Sounds like he was back in training today, so hopefully signs point to good that he might be involved in the Charlotte match. But in his stead, one Yuya Kubo called into action. Did he fill in amicably, better, worse? What'd you think?
I mean, I thought it was almost a great game defensively from Yuya Kubo. I do think that we had some tough spots, but I think in general up the middle we were pretty good. I mean, I think Buka, you know, played his part pretty well, but I thought Kubo was really pretty excellent. He had 9 recoveries, which led the field players. He won 5 of 7 of his tackles. Both of those numbers led the team. He did only win 8 of 17 duels, which is just under 50%. But I kind of mentioned that just to show like how involved he was. I mean, he was in 17 duels. You know, it just like any time the ball went into the mixer, Kubo was there. He was being disruptive, and his passing was really good. He was 92% passing. He successfully defended 3 of his 4 1v1 chances. Again, both of those numbers led the team. Like, you know, he was getting attacked, and he did a great job. And I thought filled in very well for Obi. You know, offensively, his numbers were not particularly great, but I do think defensively he is holding a lot of the bag for limiting New York City's chances. I gave Yuya Kubo a 7.5.
7.5 for you, yeah, Kubo. I like it. Oh, yeah, I thought he had a great game. You know, better than what you expect. Filled in admirably for Obi. I think he still has a bit of bite in the midfield and brings you a little bit of creativity offensively as well. He just has a certain skill set that basically you can plug and play him anywhere. So happy to see him scoring high from you. All right, let's finish out the midfield. DeAndre Yedlin, was this his best game in the orange and blue?
I mean, I think yes. I thought this was especially defensively. Now, again, I kind of harp on this all the time, but you know, offensively he didn't really add much. He did get his first shot creating action of the year, which does tie him with Nick Haglund. With one shot create, like I mean, you know, when I say he doesn't do much offensively, he really doesn't. But defensively, I thought he was fantastic. I mean, I really thought that he looked good defensively. So, you know, he had a really nice long ball to Lucho. That shot was blocked. That was his shot creating action. It was a good shot though. Then that ended up being the Baird and Oriano kind of back and forth off of that rebound, but he had a really great tackle in the box after Keller just flat out got beat. In fact, he won all 4 of his tackles. You know, just every time we needed him to make a tackle, he was there. He had 4 interceptions, which tied him for first. He was 6 of 10 on his duels. I just thought a pretty solid game from DeAndre Yedlin, especially defensively. I gave him a 7.0.
I thought this was kind of his game to show his chops defensively. Again, a little bit of a depleted NYCFC team, but you know, with his experience, with what he brings to the table, I think that's what you're asking out of him. Yeah, would we like to get a little bit more a little more service from him, maybe something offensively? But you didn't bring him in. Like, you brought Oriano in to be more offensive than defensive. Mm-hmm. You brought Yedlin in because he can be, you know, you can almost drop to a back 4, right? And you can push Murphy out wide, Miazgan Keller or Miazgan Robinson drop to the middle. DeAndre kind of fills in there, you know what I mean, as the as the formation kind of changes shape depending on if you're in possession or if you're in if you're defending. So yeah, I thought this was a really good game for him, and you know, hopefully a sign of things to come. All right, let's move into the attack. We will start with the MVP, Lucho Acosta, who it only takes one moment of brilliance, and you know, ball played in by Miazga, a great touch by Bupenza, underrated touch by Bupenza, that Lucho lets run into, I believe it was Corey Baird, who then plays it right back to him, and Lucho does Lucho things and gets the only goal that matters in this one. Other than that, he did pick up a yellow card for who knows what. I think it was dissent.
It was dissent.
I really just wish they would reset all the yellow cards now that the clown referees are gone, although some would argue that the ones coming in are as big of clowns. But anyway, yeah, Lucho in this one, I thought, again, had his fingerprints over the offensive side of it. You know, probably had some opportunities up there, but you know what it is with Lucho. He's always looking for the spectacular sometimes when the mundane and effective maybe are the better play. But hey, listen, you can't hate on his game. He's the MVP for a reason. How did he do in this one?
Yeah, I gave a lot of thought to Lucho Acosta being the man of the match, because I do think, you know, there's a lot of players in this game that played one side well or the other side well. I really think Lucho kind of was the best of both worlds. I also thought Lucho did I haven't really been bringing this up yet with anybody's particular ratings, but we had a lot of missed touches and a lot of dispossessions in this game. And usually Lucho is one of the main culprits of that. You know, cause he gets the ball in tight places a lot and, you know, he'll try to make a creative touch and it'll come off wrong. And, and, you know, so usually he is good for two dispossessions and two missed touches in a game. And like we had 19 and 12 in this game, and it's kind of a pox on everybody. I mean, even our defenders had a few issues with that, not Miazga, but almost everybody else. So yeah, he only had one dispossession in this game and no missed touches, which is great for him. You know, he had really great pressure on that long shot or long pass that Yedlin made to him. It was kind of like into double coverage, but his first touch was just absolutely great. Was able to get a shot off. It was blocked, but it led to that Luka shot. He did probably miss a wide open Bupenza, who was making a run on that. So, you know, excuse me, not quite full marks on that, but you know, and you know, like I said, I thought he was responsible for the offside that basically counteracted his great pass to Keller to you know, get that goal. But yeah, it was disallowed because he was a little bit offside. You know, gets a yellow for dissent. So, you know, not great. But then draws a yellow on Perea finally. Right before half, and then, you know, the goal, just a really great run, just kind of a dummy and makes a hard charge and just a really well struck shot, you know, absolute Galazzo. He also had another sequence right at the end of the game where he basically dribbles past two guys and gets a shot on goal in injury time, makes a Freeze make a really nice shot, you know, five shot creating actions, which ties him for the team lead, six progressive passes, which led the team, seven of the team's 14 progressive carries in the game, four of seven on his attacking dribbles, and he won both times players tried to dribble around him. He successfully stopped those, and he won nine of his 13 duels. Just a pretty great night on both sides of the ball for Lucho Acosta. When you look at it in terms of statistics, I do think that there were a couple of times I thought he looked a little out of sync. And like I said, like there's, you know, like a dumb yellow, like there were problems that kept him from being the man of the match in my eyes, but I still gave him Lucho Acosta 7.5.
All right. Yeah. Lucho was muy bueno. Te quiero mucho, Lucho. All right. Bupenza, Man, should have had one, maybe two in this one. Obviously had the chance from Luca Ori early. Not, I wasn't going to say his last name, but had that chance from Luca early that really all he has to do is drag that ball by him and slot it in with his right. Pressing probably a little bit, probably wants to get off the schneid. Still dangerous when he gets the ball at his feet. And still, you know, to his credit, like laid off a great ball from Miazga to, you know, he started that whole movement. So, you know, there were some questions about him last year about selfishness and, you know, just basically the ball going in and never coming out. I think we've seen kind of put that to bed. But, you know, you want to see him start putting the ball in the back of the net. So talk to me about his performance.
Yeah, I thought this game was particularly good because I do think. I shouldn't say particularly good. He made a lot of errors. I mean, like, but I do really like how much, like, you can tell he's getting more unselfish. Just a really great hockey assist on the goal. Like you said, just a sweet, sweet pass there. And then also had a really nice headed pass, from a Roman, I believe it was a goal kick to Spring Santos. He had a mistouch on the break there that, where he couldn't quite get a good shot on, freeze on that, but a really great Bupenza shot, headed pass to set that up. And he also had a really pretty decent shot from long range that you know, it test freeze a little bit. He was only 6 of 15 on his duels. You know, he was one that had 4 mistouches and was dispossessed twice. So, you know, that never great when that number gets, you know, above 4 or 5, even for a striker, that's not good. So, there were parts of his game that I liked, but there were definitely parts I didn't. I gave Aaron Bupenza a 6.0.
Yeah, he just, you know, again, it'll come. He's streaky, as all strikers are. And I think that eventually the dam breaks and we see him, you know, kind of get up there amongst the league leader in goals. But for now, especially when you're, again, struggling at home, you've scored 1 goal in league. You know, you've taken 5 points out of a possible 9. You want to see him putting the ball in the back of the net, especially in front of the home crowd. So, all right, let's finish out the starting 11 with the Corey Baird. He the talk of much he the subject of much consternation from the FCC faithful. So, talk to me about Corey in this one.
Yeah, I'm not quite as down on Baird as many are. I mean, I think you can criticize. There's a lot of fingers to be pointed. But like I said, I just think that this is a totally different group of people and they're just kind of figuring each other out. So, you know, there's just a lot of, a lot of near chances that just don't quite come off. But, you know, as you practice it more and now that we have these full weeks of practice, you know, you can work on more stuff and figure that stuff out better than a short turnaround when you have, you know, a game every 3 days. So, yeah, I thought he had a great opportunity off of the long free kick where it was, you know, Kubo headed it down to him. He took the shot. Shot was blocked, you know, but, you know, so not as great as it could have been, because obviously you don't want to have a shot blocked. And I think Freeze was probably there too. But he did have a really nice one touch pass, to Lucho to get the assist on the goal. He did have 2 shot creating actions. He was 85% passing, only 3 of 9 on duels. And he only got 24 touches, which is low for him. And I do think that he had a hard time getting into the game, more so than he typically does. I gave Corey Baird a 6.0.
Yep, I'm in your camp. I'm not too worried about it. So, I'm not too stressed. So, all right, let's recap the starters here. So we'll start in the net with Roman Celentano, he of a 7.5, and then the back line, Ian Murphy, a 5.5, Matt Miazga, an 8.0, your Adam Kuhn man of the match, Kip Keller, a 6.0. The midfield, solid across the board, Luca with a 6.5, Pavel with a 6.5, Yuya Kubo, the standout in the midfield with a 7.5, and DeAndre Yedlin with a very good defensive game and a 7.0. Lucho Acosta with the goal and a 7.5 rating. And then your two forwards both sitting on 6s. That's Aaron Bupenza and Corey Baird. So Adam, add it all up. 3 points at home, top of the table in the East, top of the supporter shield standings. Despite all of our complaints, this team is still right where we thought it would be, and everything is in front of them. And as we say, they control their own destiny. Games are coming now, probably 1 week at a time. So you're not worried about overuse of any of the players. You're not worried about, you know, stacking of games like we might have been with CCC now that we're out of that. So how you feeling 5 games into the season?
I mean, pretty good. I mean, I will say, like, we're definitely not into the teeth of our schedule right now.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not.
But, you know, I do think that you know, getting out of the CCC early is probably a blessing to mm-hmm. our supporters shield chances, especially just being able to rest guys and play our, you know, get our people used to each other. Basically, you don't have to rotate as much. You can kind of keep the same group out there and get them used to each other in a full game situation. So, you know, I do think that we should be in first place right now.
On 15 points.
Honestly, yes, we should be in first place on 15 points. If we didn't have CCC to worry about, who knows? We might have been.
We still should have scored a goal in both those games.
Well, that's true. I mean, I will say I thought Toronto looked better than I would have thought. But yeah, definitely the other. Who was that other one? Was it Chicago? That's right. DC. yeah. So yeah, we definitely should have won that DC game. But again, like that New England game, that was a trap game.
Was a tough game.
Chicago, yeah. I mean, I do think that the East is across the board. Like there aren't too many like real slouches in the East.
It's going to be hard for a team in the East to win the Supporter Shield, in my opinion.
Yeah, exactly. That's kind of what I'm getting at. Like, I think a team like LAFC, you know, now that they have Chanot coming in, if they get Giroud in at the summer break, I mean, they could really rack up some points out there. So, I just think that you know, nothing's going to be easy for us the rest of the way. But you know, we got a chance. I mean, it's hard to turn over basically half your lineup, half your starters from a Supporter Shield winning team and expect the same results. Which is kind of what I've, you know, I
know what we're doing.
Well, right. Exactly. But it's like, I do kind of caution people, like, this is not the team that won last year. Like, this isn't, we have a lot of the key guys are back, agreed, but it's not the same team. It's going to take time for these guys to kind of figure out. Yeah. And, you know, especially a guy like Buka, it's like, you know, he's kind of has to figure out his spot on this team. And honestly, Corey Baird does too. It's like they've kind of got to, you know, learn their role. And Lucho hasn't played with guys quite like this, that like a guy like Pavel, who's a really creative midfielder. You know, we haven't really had a second creative midfielder on the team, and a guy like Corey Baird, who's not exactly like a forward that he's played with before, even
right,
like
different kind of forward.
Yeah, even in his DC days, you know, he's playing with you know, more traditional like forwards, and you know, Corey Baird just isn't quite what you think of when you think of a usual forward. So, you know, it's just going to take some time. And hopefully
you can do that and stay near the top of the table, then the sky's the limit.
Right. And that's, you know, when it comes down to like League's Cup and all that stuff, like if we can get it figured out, headed into League's Cup, then I think we have a good chance of winning, you know, one or more pieces of hardware this year.
All right. Well, and any subs? I really think Hagelin was probably the only one that got a meaningful amount of run. It was his first action of the year, and he got in, mm-hmm. I want to say, at least 27 slide tackles in that time.
So yeah.
It was good to have Nick back and good to see him. He got a great ovation and, you know, good for him for coming back from that injury. And, you know, he's going to be an important depth piece for this team. So,
I don't know.
Well, important because he's center back five.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. You know, I think he's going to be fighting for a starting spot just like anybody else. And
he's going to be fighting for a new starting spot. I mean, with Murphy and Keller in front of him. I don't know.
I mean, hey,
but you know what? If that's what you've got battling for that third spot, good. Because then that gets him on the same level as, you know, you've got Miazga and Robinson. And, you know, the good thing is you've already got two studs there. If you can, mm-hmm. if that raises the level of the three guys fighting for it, then that's great. If something were to happen and one of those two guys were to go down for a period of time, you know, you've got Nick Hagelin, who has a wealth of experience. You've got Kip Keller, who has shown a solid upside. And you still have Ian Murphy, obviously, who has logged a lot of MLS minutes for being a super draft guy and right. has performed admirably in those minutes. Not spectacular, but he's been serviceable. And, you know, this defense travels.
Yeah, I mean, I will say, I think that none of these guys, any kind of, you know, ankle sprain could put you on the bench for the rest of the year. Cause like none of these guys are going to be giving it up easily. Right. You know, like, yeah, you got two written in pen starters. Like nobody's replacing Miles Robinson. Nobody's replacing Matt Miazga. There's three guys fighting for basically one starting spot. And it'll just come down to like, who has better chemistry.
Who's hot. Yep.
And who, like, I, Hagelin's an energy guy. Like I think, you know, he's a hard guy to keep on a bench. He's a vibes guy and he doesn't make a lot of mistakes anymore, which, you know, I can't believe I'm saying out loud.
That's true.
Considering how he was when he came here. But, he's really looked good under Pat Noonan. So like I would think that Ian Murphy has the inside track to be the starter from here going forward, just because it's easier to play Miles on the right. But I wouldn't count on it. I wouldn't bet my house on it. So, you know, it's a good problem to have.
All right. Well, as the games stack up and as the results stack up with them, we will be here to bring you all of the reaction and all of the ratings. So we got a big one in Charlotte this weekend on the turf in an NFL stadium. You're a fake club, but you did beat Columbus. So we thank you for that, albeit because the ref gave a red card, which doesn't make any sense, and called another goal back, which made, well, he was offside. He was offside on the goal kick, but that's neither here nor there. So FCC travels to a hard place to get a victory. Charlotte's looked better than they have in the past. More organization under their new coach. So it certainly isn't going to be a cakewalk, and we will be here to bring you all the reaction and all the ratings. So thanks again for sticking with us. I know it was a late one this week. Adam was traveling on vacation and I was out for work. So, but we're happy to bring you this, and we will bring you Charlotte after this. So until next time, for Grade A, I am Adam Wygand saying Prost.
And I'm Adam Kuhn. Eat a junior bacon cheeseburger.
So I was driving back from the old cigar bar. I like to frequent when I'm in Indianapolis because, you know, Ohio doesn't have indoor smoking, which
right. Is
kind of dumb, but whatever. And I had to get me some food. So it got me to thinking, Adam, rank your top 3 to 5. I don't know if you even have to go to 5 fast food joints.
Ooh.
A lot to consider here.
Yeah, I know. We're not including like fast casual in there. We're talking like real, like drive-through.
Yeah, dude, like Chipotle's fast casual. Skyline, right. Fast casual.
Right, okay.
I'm talking hardcore. fast food spots.
Okay, my number one is Wendy's.
Ooh, see, I am. It's a close one and two. I do like Wendy's. I'm eating a spicy chicken sandwich as we speak.
That is my go-to at Wendy's as well.
Yeah.
You can. I love a spicy, but I also every now and then I crave a junior bacon cheeseburger.
So okay, I'm gonna give you my Wendy's order. All right, you can rate my Wendy's order because this is what I actually got tonight. So I get the number six, which is the spicy chicken sandwich, but I go light mayonnaise and pickles only. I don't want that tomato. I don't want that lettuce. Just mucks it up. Little Diet Coke to drink, medium size. And then I add a junior cheeseburger deluxe with no tomato. So you get the lettuce and the onion on the junior cheeseburger deluxe.
All right. Uh-huh.
So that's kind of like my go-to.
Yeah.
I mean, you feeling it? You need the tomato? What's the story?
When I'm at Wendy's, I need the tomato. I feel like Wendy's, one of the things that I value in a fast food place is
quality of the tomato
freshness. and lettuce freshness. Like, if we had In-N-Outs here, I would eat it In-N-Out constantly.
Overrated.
Well, because you don't like fresh tomato and fresh.
Well, that's true. You know what? I'll own it. Yeah, it's fair.
Like that's what makes them. And in the same. So if I'm talking local, all right, Wendy's is my number one.
Yep.
Taco Bell is my number two.
Ooh, yeah. Taco Bell is like a wrench in the whole thing because they don't serve burgers, right? So when you think fast food, like it's your burger joints. Mm-hmm. Taco Bell is like that curveball. But man, in the right kind of time, in the right time frame, it's clutch. I'm a Cholito guy. I have Cholitos.
I can definitely eat a Cholito. That used to be a staple of my order. Right now, they have like what's it even called? It's like the nacho cheese burrito. It's like a grilled nacho cheese burrito.
I eat
that like it's going out of style. I also enjoy a chicken gordita, an awful lot.
Taco Bell, for as great as it is, their biggest, like the biggest negative to them is their menu is just too goddamn, like it's too complicated.
Well, right. And like they've gotten rid of like a lot of my favorite things. Like I used to always eat like a 7-layer burrito. That's gone.
Yeah, that was good.
You know, but Taco Bell probably would have been higher back in the seven layer burrito days. It would have been my number one. And then I think third, I enjoy a Culver's.
Is Culver's really fast food, though? I think they're borderline. They want to think they're fast casual, but they're really not, right?
Yeah. They're not super quick. I mean, I don't know. I consider them more of a drive-through place than they're not slow like a Steak and Shake. Like Steak and Shake has a drive-through, but it's like you're kidding me.
It's like going to the drive-through at Frisch's, right?
Right. Come on. Right. Like you, and Culver's is not one of those places that I really often see just tons of people sitting down inside. Like, you know, yeah,
that's a good point too. I mean, if the dine-in area isn't full, it's not really a dine-in kind of place.
Right. So, you know, that's my thought on Culver's. But yeah, I much for the same reason I like Wendy's for their tomato selection, I think Culver's does a pretty good job with that. So
see, now I would have never guessed that the tomato was the limiting factor on whether or not it was good or bad.
Yeah. Tomato. It's like the tomato and mayonnaise, like combination at Wendy's
mayo is so good.
They're like, it's just the proper balance of tomato and mayonnaise. And that's, that wins me over. And I do kind of feel the same way about Culver's too. You know, back when I lived in the South, I used to go to Whataburger a lot.
Yeah. Whataburgers. Yeah.
It's solid, but it is a little bit more of a gut punch kind of I'm not going there. Like, I just really like their burgers.
Mm-hmm.
I'd say that's my top three for what we have around here.
Well, let's see. You had Wendy's, then you kind of tried to slip In-N-Out in there. Yeah. You said Taco Bell. So it would be Wendy's, Bell,
Taco Bell, Culver's for things you can get in the greater Cincinnati area.
Who's number four?
Oh, I mean, I almost never go anywhere else. Like okay. if it's that's those, like my kids like McDonald's every now and then. I want a Big Mac, but for the most part, I don't really do like it. McDonald's is never my suggestion. If I could count Skyline as fast food, I would say Skyline.
Right. Yeah, but you can't. We'll call that fast casual.
Right.
And for the record, like the GOAT. The GOAT meal at McDonald's is the Filet-O-Fish. The Filet-O-Fish at McDonald's is the bomb. Their tartar sauce is so good. Shout out Jake Wygand. I know you're listening, and I know the Filet-O-Fish is your go-to at McDonald's.
It's funny because that is my wife was just telling me about a podcast she was listening to called How Did We Get Weird? And it's kind of like a, hey, remember
you're going
to
talk about where the Filet-O-Fish was, where it was invented.
No, I'm actually going to talk about, they just had Wolfgang Van Halen on and,
Eddie's son,
Eddie's son. And, he said that the Filet-O-Fish was always his dad's go-to because it's like, nobody orders those, so they have to make them fresh. So they're all, like, you know, they're going to be fresh.
Yeah.
When you order them. So that was, it's funny that Filet-O-Fish has been brought up so often in the last couple days.
Do you know where the Filet-O-Fish was, invented?
I mean, I don't know. Was it California?
No, this is a little bit of Cincinnati history right here. Come on.
Oh, I have no idea.
Mumford Heights, McDonald's. Invented the Filet-O-Fish. Do you want to know why they invented the Filet-O-Fish?
No,
this is a true story. You guys are listening. Look this shit up. Google it. It's the truth. The guy that owned the Mumford Heights McDonald's at the time was pissed because during Lent, their sales on Friday tanked because they all went to the fish fries. And they said, we have to start offering a fish sandwich. So the Mumford Heights McDonald's invented the Filet-O-Fish for McDonald's. So I'm telling you, Cincinnati is the epicenter of everything.
Well, it is the epicenter of German Catholics. So,
yes, it is definitely that. And yeah, so, low-key McDonald's hack or any fast food hack, if I have to get McDonald's, which I don't very often, but if I do, I go for the quarter pounder, but I always order it with no onion. That way, they have to make it fresh.
Yeah, that's true. I mean,
always change your order by one ingredient, and they have to make it fresh.
That's right. I will say, like, if we were including sub places, I do have to give a shout out to Firehouse, which is,
I had Penn Station today.
Now you see, I love a Philly cheesesteak, but
Penn Station teriyaki chicken. That is the GOAT.
I can't eat a cheesesteak with provolone. It's got to have cheese whiz on it.
You're a whiz guy, huh?
I'm a whiz guy. And I like. I kind of get that way with Reuben sandwiches too, like Thousand Island. But if they have Russian dressing, I will order it every time.
I mean, isn't it the same except just spicier?
Exactly. That's exactly
mean,
it.
Like, I mean, like it's Thousand Island with a little bit of horseradish in it or something.
Exactly. And it's so much better.
Russell's out here like cursing at us talking about food.
Come join us on the other Cincinnati food
podcast. We will talk about the common man's food. We're not into all that fancy stuff he is.
We're gonna go. Here's what we're gonna do. We're gonna go to Jungle Jim's.
Oh shit!
And we're gonna buy snack cakes, and we're just gonna review snack cakes. All right.
Oh my god, dude! Zebra cakes are the number one winner. There's nothing else that comes close to a zebra cake.
But we'll go to like their international food section and just buy whatever.
Yeah, J snacks are really good. Japanese snacks.
That's what I'm saying.
All the Kit Kat flavors. All the Kit Kat flavors.
Right.
Yeah. So my three. I probably would have had Wendy's on top because, again, the spicy chicken. I mean, if you want to throw Popeyes in there, I mean, if we're talking about spicy chicken sandwiches, Popeyes is the GOAT of spicy chicken sandwiches.
Popeyes does make a good sandwich.
It's the biggest. It's the biggest piece of chicken you'll ever eat. And the spicy sauce they put on it is to die for. Like Popeyes spicy chicken sandwich is unrivaled. I don't want to hear any of this Chick-fil-A bullshit. Like Chick-fil-A, garbage. garbage.
I mean, Chick-fil-A is okay, but it's kind of like...
Dude, they have waffle fries. Big fucking deal. Exactly. You get five of them.
Exactly. Yeah. They're bland.
Yeah, don't like it.
Yeah, so, Popeyes. Popeyes has flavor.
Popeyes, though, is a very specific. Like, you go to Popeyes for the spicy chicken sandwich. But regular fast food, yeah. Wendy's, because like a double Whopper with cheese. No, that's Burger King. A double single.
I don't go there.
Oh, now Burger King. Burger King has a special place in my heart only because my bestie, if I can call him that, is that the right term to use? But old Tony Corelli, shout out, you never listen, asshole. But yeah, he used to work at Burger King in high school. So he worked the broiler steamer is what they called it. That's where they put all the buns and the meat through. But dude, the original chicken sandwich at Burger King, like the OG, not this chicken shit that they have now.
You're right.
But the OG chicken sandwich from Burger King, so good. So good. That's good mayonnaise there.
Yes, great mayonnaise. Terrible tomatoes, though.
Yeah. Yeah. The issue I have with Burger King is they put way too much ketchup and mustard on their burgers. Like, I always have to get it with light ketchup and mustard because otherwise the shit gets everywhere. It overpowers the sandwich.
Yeah. No, I haven't eaten at a Burger King in years. Oh. It's never been a winner for me. So
Jake and I on the way down to FCC games, we stop at the Burger King in Sydney. We get four double cheeseburgers, light ketchup and mustard. Of course, the pickles need to stay. Get a medium fry to share because their fries are kind of ass. Yeah, and like that's it. Two double cheeseburgers on the way down. Perfect. Going into TQL.
I appreciate that you have not brought up White Castle, which is an abomination against nature.
It has its place.
Yeah. Well, like, maybe if you're like hammered drunk at 3 a.m, but then if Jimmy John's is open, I'm going to Jimmy John's.
But you got to get Jimmy John's with the bread. You got to go with the wheat bread.
Yeah.
The Italian nightclub with the wheat bread is a hack. That is a hack.
Beach Club on Wheat is my go-to. I could eat those every day.
Yeah, because their bread is not great. So yeah, I don't like their regular hoagie roll. It's just not good.
It's all right. It's not my favorite. Again, I'm going Firehouse. If I want a submarine, I'll go to Firehouse. But yeah,
we call them hoagies in this part of town.
Yeah. Well, but I like a guacamole on a sandwich, and
give it a little creamy. Yep.
I do
like guac. I do like guac on a sandwich too. But yeah, those double cheeseburgers coming in from Burger King, so good. When they hit them, they're good. But their fries, God, their fries suck.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wendy's fries are good.
Yeah. They used to be terrible, but they've gotten a lot better.
Yeah, they went to that new always crispy kind of thing, which they're not always crispy, but you know, they have like the fake potato skin on them, so you think you're eating a potato. I'm sure it's not, but I mean, it fools me enough.
Yeah, and I'll say that I think Burger King used to have good fries, but they don't really anymore.
They had really good fries, and they got rid of them. I'm telling you, these places, they just don't know a good thing when they have it.
Yeah, there, you know, Arby's. I used to go to Arby's every now and then just to get fries.
Arby's and the Jamocha is like, shake. Hell yeah. You got to get the Jamocha shake. Arby's was always like the fancy fast food, though. It was the expensive fast food.
Yeah.
But the beef and cheddar, dude, you can't beat the beef and cheddar with some Arby's sauce on it. Come on.
Yeah. You get into my love of horseradish, which segues me into going to Buffalo this weekend, where like one of the local dishes is called a beef on weck, which is roast beef sandwich, thick sliced roast beef on a Kilowick bun, which is basically like a salted hamburger bun. And then you just pile on the raw horseradish and it's sitting in the au jus and it's fantastic.
Do you know what BW3 stands for?
No.
Oh, my God. Come on.
Buffalo Wild Wings.
And you just said it. Weck.
And Weck.
It used to be, when it first opened, it was Buffalo Wild Wings and Weck is what it was called, because they used to have the roast beef, the Weck. That is how you say it, Weck. It's
Kilowack. Yeah. It's
Yeah, so they used to have that as a sandwich, and then they just kind of transitioned into just chicken wings only and went B-dubs. But yeah, it used to be Buffalo Wild Wings and Weck. That's why it was BW3s, because it was the three W's, Wild Wings and Weck.
Yep. Well, sir, I have learned something today.
You learned that Montford Heights created the Filet-O-Fish sandwich, and BW3s used to not be B-dubs. It used to be something else.
That's right. Now we have 20 minutes to do our show.
We got more than that, man. Yeah, I'm gonna say, around. I'm just saying, this is
how our show evolves from a soccer rating podcast into a food eating podcast.
This is what happens when I've drank three Jamesons and had a couple cigars before I record, because I'm traveling. Yeah, so we're gonna have to talk about your cigar smoking and whiskey drinking on another podcast, because
that's right,
I can definitely lay down some knowledge on that too. So, but hey, you're the smart one, I'm the dumb one, so let's just get down to it. What do you say?
Yeah, let's get down to it.
All right, let's pause. Yeah.